Coming in on the WhatsApp line, says, "Hi, Abs. Thanks for letting me know that Bafana Bafana is playing today. I am in need of some comedy." That's from Soli. Hey, we're still patriots, Father. We will still support, come what may. We're going to talk about Bafana Bafana. In the meantime, I want to talk to you about something very, very important. It is 20 minutes after 9, and each year we recognize World TB Day on the 24th of March, a day focused on, you know, collective efforts to end the global TB pandemic. The theme this year we hear is Yes, We Can End TB. And this week, the TB Accountability Consortium launched their second State of the TB report titled Tackling Governance Gaps to Improve Care. To chat more about this is Director of Rural Health Advocacy Project, Russell Rensberg. Russell, a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity and good morning to the listeners.
Russell, I mean, please just give us some maybe summary of the most burning issues to come out of the 2023 edition of the State of TB report.
I think the main thing coming out of it is that we do, firstly, you know, we're from the Rural Health Advocacy Project who coordinates the implementation of this particular project, and our interest is the Rural Health Advocacy Project is obviously rural delivery. And a big portion of the findings that we have in this report is that our current governance systems are not strong enough to ensure effective coordination of the TB response and other health system responses. So firstly, just in the way that we make up our governance response, we have a national and provincial system. Our report found, for instance, that national plans are not always effectively communicated and implemented at the provincial level with each of the provinces, often adapting their own strategies, and then some of the important things are lost, particularly like the report focuses on the evaluation of the TB recovery plan. And it was interesting that we found that even at different levels, sometimes people didn't even know that this plan was in place. And that's obviously a huge problem for the coordination and implementation of our plan.
And, you know, TB is both preventable and treatable, and yet TB remains the leading cause of death from a single infectious disease. Why is this?
Look, I think it's because TB is so directly linked to poverty. You know, I think even though everybody can get TB in cities, practically or based on the evidence, it's concentrated among poor communities. And I think one of the biggest challenges is, which the World TB report showed us, that we know that more than 300,000 people acquire TB every year, yet we only manage to get 181,000 of those people to get a diagnosis. And I think the important thing here is to say, first, we're missing 120,000 patients not coming through for a test and being initiated into TB care. But I think what it also highlights is that there is a problem with diagnosing TB. In a study did in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape that used what they called standardized patients, where they train patients in the leading symptoms of TB. And normally, if you register at least two or three of those, you should be initiated or promoted onto a test. And these things are like simple questions like night sweats, loss of appetite, rapid weight loss, persistent coughs. And the patients reported that, but less than half of them were initiated into a test. So I think one of the biggest challenges is ensuring that we screen people well, we link TB with the communities, and communities become part of the response so that we can increase the amount of people that can get a diagnosis. Because once you have a diagnosis, you know, then we can move on to the next step of keeping people in care. And based on the statistics, we actually do quite well. 78% of people who start TB treatment complete it. You know, so the biggest single challenge that we face at the moment is making sure that people can get the diagnosis. And to do that, we need to shift our response to the local level. We have to make sure that when people, and I think the guidelines suggest that, is that we test all people at risk of TB before TB, regardless of symptoms. And to do that, we need governance to work to support the different implementation platforms.
If you've just joined the conversation, it is 24 minutes after 9. You're listening to the voice of the director for the Rural Health Advocacy Project. That's Russell Rensberg talking to you about the TB Accountability Consortium that has launched their second State of TB report titled Tackling Government Gaps to Improve Care. Would love to hear from you at home on 0214460567. Maybe you can send a text or voice note on 0725671567, because we want to know, perhaps you have or you are a survivor of TB. Can you share your experiences with us? Or maybe you have some advice to share with us. And maybe, like the question coming in from Anthony, Russell, are saying that I had a friend who went off his TB medication years ago. He got drug-resistant TB and was picked up by police and nurses from the local TB clinic and taken to Brooklyn Chest Hospital, where he spent a whole year to get treatment. He recovered, thankfully. Thus, does this still happen? That is from Anthony.
No, to my understanding, not. And I think part of that response to TB is like that focuses on control. Is one of the things that we must disabuse ourselves of. We have to find different ways of engaging. And I think with drug-resistant TB, we've had some measures of success, and incidence of drug-resistant TB has been declining. But I think the big challenge is there is really getting shorter regimens for people to take. And the regimens being the medicines and the period of time that they are in care. But you'll see the successes of XDR now is that we're closing a lot of those TB hospitals, as there's not enough demand keep them open. But I think we have to really, when we think about TB, we really have to think about each one tower. You know, we must get as many people knowledgeable around what TB is and what causes TB. We have to make sure that the people that are in close contact or live with people who have previously had TB get the testing that they need. And I think one of the major new interventions that we have is that we've improved preventative TB therapy. You know, so if you go into a health center and get a TB test and test negative, we can now introduce or make available to you really preventative therapy, right? But again, the governance has to ensure that those drugs are available when people need them. And lately, those drugs are not available. So, yeah, I think that's where the accountability part comes in. But thankfully, we're not in that environment where we have to contain people and keep them in hospitals for extended periods of time or use that kind of police type of approaches to managing and controlling the TB visit.
And I would imagine that would be very labor intensive. You'd need a lot of hands to still continue with that sort of thing. Here's a question, Russell, and this was a question where we discussed myself, Amy and Waleed, the producers of the show, and we wanted to learn perhaps if there has been any lessons learnt from the COVID-19 pandemic that, you know, can be used to respond to TB. What's the best way to prevent more TB deaths?
The best way to prevent more TB tests is manage advocacy or data-driven information and decision-making. Right? I think that was probably the single biggest lesson, that we were able to translate the data into intelligence very quickly, and we were able to adapt and adjust our responses to COVID as the information came in. So that capability still sits with us. Right? And I think it's an important lever for change for us to improve bi-directional information flows from the districts to the province, to the national, and then having some kind of transparent decision-making to show that we're using this information to drive how we allocate resources, resources both human and otherwise, and how do we bring the community into the response, much in the way that we did COVID. Obviously, it won't be at the same scale, because people don't look at TB in the same way that they looked at COVID, but that using data to drive decision-making is a key lesson. The second lesson that we'd like to take from COVID is just making testing as easily available as possible. We've had some challenges with COVID in the equity of testing. And I think in the rural areas in particular, we're going to have to work a little bit harder to getting out of the health system. You know, so at the moment, most of our TB tests are done within the clinic. And I think one of the things that we did during COVID is sort of expand who could do testing. So we can take some of those lessons and try and apply it in a manner that we can expand where the diagnostic capacity and linkages to care. And I think the third thing is that we must have flexibility in the way that we move around resources. And one of the things that we have in the National TB Recovery Plan that I think is useful that we should take forward is that we know where the highest prevalence of TB is across 10 districts in the country. And if we make a concerted effort to implement things like targeted universal TB testing in those areas, making sure that we link patients to care, and then ensuring that people stay in care, we can make a significant impact on the trajectory of TB going forward. So I think those are some of the valuable lessons we've learned from COVID. I think the main one is democratize testing and open up as many opportunities for people to test and get knowledge. The second one is to use the data that we collect for decision making. And then the third one is involve communities in the response. Don't just make them the subject of the response, but make them a part of it. Use our churches, use our health user groups, use our sports clubs, particularly in those areas where there's a high prevalence of TB, to become part of the response in fighting this deadly disease that's curable.
Russell, thank you so very much for joining us in conversation. Russell Rensbeck, Director of the Rural Health Advocacy Project.